Hello and welcome to the live stream live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and I hope you are doing so well. It's been a few weeks. I've missed you all. I have had another child. Her name is Millie, and we love her so much. And it's just been such a magical, harrowing, awesome time having baby number two in the house. My mug today is another Lucas Roasting Company mug. It's the green one. It's fantastic. Very, very ceramic. Very nice in the lips. I love it very much. This show is going to be a little meta because my special guest, Troy Lucas, is also the show's sponsor. Lucas Roasting Company is the sponsor of the show, as you know, over the past many, many weeks. They are located in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, and they are a craft coffee coffee roasting company. I know Troy and his entire family very, very well. And in my opinion, they make some of the best coffee that I've ever had in my life. I've been all over the world. I've had amazing coffee in Paris and Spain and most recently when I was over in Italy, but Lucas makes the best coffee, I think, in the world, and it's in New Hampshire, and you can get 15% off your first internet order with the code THELIVESTREAMLIVE, which is all linked in every one of these videos at the bottom. Yeah. So that's cool. So what have I been up to? What have I been watching and what have I been reading? Well, I am a new dad again. And it has been a very, I don't want to say easy time because that's the wrong thing to say. We were just told that it was going to be extremely hard to go from one to two. Yeah, I agree with you. We got uncommon. This is best darn coffee in all of New England. Thanks for all that bring to our wonderful town. It is the best coffee in New England, damn near, I think, the United States of America. Anyway, but going from one to two hasn't been hard in terms of like raising a child. It's been hard because of the toll that it's been taking on our oldest. Thank you, Ivan. I appreciate that. Thank you for the congratulations. We're so happy. It's that with my oldest Fitz, she's adjusting oddly. Her emotions are very wild and all over the place, and I know that that's normal, and me and my wife completely understand. It just takes a toll because you have to be a little bit more stern with things that you may not have before, behavioral issues that are popping up that weren't there before. So it's more of like an emotional, emotional toll that it's having on our oldest daughter, which I know will change and it'll get better. And hopefully they'll become best friends, which I'm sure will happen. We'll at least try really hard to make that happen. But so far it's been almost 3 weeks. I know it's been like a long time. It's been a great time and I'm super happy and gigantically blessed to now have my very large four-person family, which is great, and our dog Jameson, who is also having a lot of emotions, but we can't really speak to him because he's a dog. He's just doing weird stuff like peeing on the ground and shit, so that's kind of annoying, but he'll get through it too, I think. I have been watching a lot of stuff because, you know, we're like bottle feeding, so I've got like most of the overnight shifts, so I've been watching this show called The Silo, or is it just called Silo on Apple Plus? And if you haven't seen it, it's a really cool dystopian future science fictiony type of thing with Rebecca Ferguson, who was also in like Mission Impossible. She was in both of the most recent Dune movies. She played Timothy Chalamet's mother. Yeah, she was like, she took the like blue juice and went crazy and then could like see the future. Anyway, so it's about how there was some kind of like nuclear holocaust outside and everyone lives on these like underground like bunker silos and they're hundreds of feet and like tons of levels deep, and there's all this interpersonal political drama and blah blah blah, and it's really good, like really really good. Like as an hour-long drama science fiction show goes, it is very well done. It's well acted, an amazing story, and I was very happy to watch it while I was feeding my daughter. And I also got to complete a book that I've been reading for like probably like a month and a half. Like I just finished it today. It's Skin Game by Jim Butcher from the Dresden Files. I've been reading that for like like a month or more, but I finally finished it and I'm very happy. It's a great one, and I know it's not new, but it's a great one. Let's see. Obviously, we have a new administration. There's a lot of political bullshit going on. There's a lot of people that are very upset, that are very sad, that are very hurt, that are feeling marginalized and are potentially becoming erased. And it seems like every day there's a new fresh hell coming out of the news cycle. And while it is very, very, very shitty, and we should all stay very active and speak to our elected officials as much as possible and just try and understand what is going on, it's also important to just breathe, take some time for yourself and be with your family and your friends or whoever you need to be with, and just try and chill the fuck out a little bit. Because the anxiety level that I know I'm feeling all the time and my wife is feeling all the time and all of my friends and close family members that are in the LGBTQIA plus community are feeling, it's very high and it's very, very not good. And I don't mean to laugh because it's not funny, but just know that a lot of it is just bluster and bullshit. It's a lot of just seeing what can be done and what can be gotten away with. So just breathe and see how it all shakes out, and then get up in the stuff that needs to be got into, and then the things that don't, just let it pass you by, because it's just noise meant to make you feel bad. So that's my two cents. Thank you for the heart. I love you too. I hope that resonated just a little bit, because that's what I needed to hear too, even though I'm the one saying it. All right, so let's jump out of that, and I want to intro my guest Troy Lucas. So I know Troy. He pretty well. Me and my entire family, well, I married into the family, but they've been going to Wolfboro, New Hampshire every year, usually for a long time over the summer, but as we've been going more and more, we pop up in the winter, we do all the like fun local shit that we can. And one of the amazing things about this town is that it pulls in a lot of interesting people. Like Jimmy Fallon has a house there. Lots of people are very into all of the small businesses that are there. And that is primarily what exists. There's like one Dunkin' Donuts, and I believe the town like said yes to it, like kicking and screaming, but they try very hard to keep their small businesses there and as booming and as popular as they can, because it's a large vacation town and a lot of these places make all their money for the year in a very small window of time, from like 4th of July week to I think the first week of August. I mean, Troy will have more in information on that when I bring him on. But we happened upon Lucas Roasting Company many, many years ago, and we fell in love with the family, with Troy and with Jenica and their kids, and most importantly, with their incredible product. They, like I was saying before, with the promo code, which I'm just gonna put on the screen again because I want to, but they make coffee for people who love coffee. You can tell that this is an art form for Troy. He's a basically a one-man operation. He roasts everything. He makes almost everything in his cafe, and he's just busting his ass to make this work, and he has been for years, and it has been inspiring and a thing that I respect more than anything else. Coming from the entertainment industry, it just, yeah. So anyway, now that he's heard me say all of these nice things about him, here is Troy Lucas. Bang. Hey, buddy.
Hello.
Hello,
everybody. How's it going, man?
Thanks for that warm introduction, Josh. Really appreciate that.
You're welcome. Really, it's all true.
I really appreciate you. You and your family becoming friends over the years. We loved having you in Wolfboro in our cafe, and now on the show. Yeah, so this is cool.
Yeah, you're on the show now. You're on the show that you sponsor. Wow.
Wolfboro.
So let's jump right in here. So you're not originally from New Hampshire, right? Where did you come from?
Well, I grew up in Indiana. Graduated from college, and moved to Virginia after college doing some volunteer service. And that's how I met my wife. I actually hurt my back at my project, maybe about 3 weeks into the project. And my wife, God love her, she happened to work at the chiropractic office that I went to get my back fixed.
That's awesome.
So I could stand up straight. Yeah. So, and then we got married pretty quickly, actually, at the end of that year of volunteer service. And then we did our own year of volunteer service from there. I went into Pennsylvania and did some Habitat for Humanity stuff.
That's amazing work, dude. That's the really needed.
So, and somewhere along the way, we had this crazy idea. So she's the one that's from New Hampshire, and she moved away down to Virginia when she was 12. Her grandparents owned a family furniture business, and they moved it down to the Shenandoah Valley. And against her will, she moved from the north down to the south, and just kind of always. The Yankee never got out of Jenica. She really has always wanted to come back. And, we did try to come back 22 years ago. We lived across Lake Winnipesaukee in Laconia. We got pregnant. You're talking about, your newborn. We got pregnant with our first son, and decided that we wanted to be closer to her mom and dad, which were back in Virginia. So we moved down there for a while and started our business. And then we had another son 3 years after that one. And then we all moved up here. So we've gone back and forth from New Hampshire three times. And
I understand it. So, it's beautiful there. And it's just like unmarred wildlife and a lot of nature. And you don't really have that a lot anymore. And I know that there's issues with some of the folks that live there and the things of that nature, but like the land is
right. Well, we were drawn when we were looking for a place to land our business in New Hampshire. We were drawn to Wolfboro because initially we saw the town. We actually drove all over New Hampshire looking for a place to live and to rebuild our business from Virginia. And when we found Wolfboro, it was what you were just saying. It was all these little businesses that were independently owned and operated, the mom and pops everywhere. That was what was our attraction to being here.
Sure.
Dunkin' Donuts. I think at the time there was a Rite Aid, which is now
is it Walgreens or something?
Walgreens, yeah. So, everything else is like, little mom and pop businesses, and that's what we wanted to be a part of,
which I love. And you don't really, that's not anywhere anymore. I mean, it's in small pockets
of
America, but that's what America was. It was independent small businesses that like were the towns that they were a part of. And that's kind of
right. It wasn't every
what
it, it was it wasn't everything didn't look like the same town back in the day. Like everything looked like a different town. So you'd go to this town and you'd have these businesses, and you go to this town, and, you know, now with all the franchises and stuff everywhere, you know, every town looks kind of the same. So that's what made Wolfboro different. And, yeah. So
you started your coffee business when you were in Virginia?
Correct. We started in 2007. So September 2007 was when we started. And we started at our home. We actually built our first roasting facility on our property down in Virginia. So we built a 24-foot by 24-foot building that was like the biggest building that we could build for what room we had on our property. And that was our first roasting facility. And yeah.
Why? Why did you choose coffee?
Yes. So that's a story that's interesting too. And that goes all the way back to 22 years ago living in Laconia. So my background is actually, I have a psychology background and I've worked in behavioral health. And so the job that I had in Laconia before going back to Virginia was a behavioral health job. And it was heavy. It was working with kids who were in crisis. And the parents, you know, with them. And it was a very heavy job. And so my supervisor and I, we always tried to end our weeks by having a conversation that when we were getting together on supervision, talking about what was going on for my client, we always tried to end on something positive. And he and I found out very quickly that coffee was our thing. Like we both loved it. And so before we moved back to Virginia, Jack was like, "Hey, just want to let you know too, by the way, this coffee talk we're having, you can roast your own coffee at home. And like, it's the best coffee that you'll ever have." I was like, "Really? I'm getting ready to have a kid. And like, you're telling me I can roast my own coffee at home?" And like, yeah, so it was a seed that was planted. And when we moved back to Virginia,
So it was a hobby first.
It was very much a hobby first. So yeah, when our first, son was born, Quinn. I'd already gotten a coffee roaster, a little hobby coffee roaster prior to him being born. And as soon as he was born, we started drinking lots of coffee. It was really that's good awesome. Coffee.
Yeah, but that's how it starts. Like you like something and then you just get kind of obsessed with it, right? Like and then you get really good at it. You like put in your 10,000 hours and then you become a master of it and then you just can't stop.
Yeah, well, we actually, our first business was actually, so as we were having kids, as if we needed to have anything else, as you now know, with two kids in a household, as if we needed anything else to be doing, actually working full-time jobs already, we had started a gourmet biscotti business in Virginia. Oh, a gourmet biscotti
business too?
Yeah, that was in our home, so it wasn't very big, but it was going to farmers markets and whatnot, and the coffee was just a side thing to tie into it, and it was it really wasn't much of a focus at all.
That's funny.
The biscotti were the biggest focus, and then then with all the labeling laws that started coming out with allergies and nuts and stuff like that, that we got a little nervous about all of that since we were doing it in our home and we know some people are really allergic to things in a big way. We decided we would let the professionals have that in their big facility for the, you know, biscotti making and all the ingredients that might accidentally kill somebody. And then we went into coffee. We figured if you're allergic to coffee, you probably should stay away from coffee. And we figure people know that. So we don't really need to put the allergy warning on the coffee bag.
But that's true. Yeah, that's true.
So you started
in your home and then you moved up to New Hampshire and opened a spot, or you opened a spot there first?
Yeah, so we wholesaled out of the place down in Virginia. We didn't have any retail. We had a coffee trailer that we would do for festivals and different events that we pulled around. But we did online like we do here with your live stream, live code.
Yeah.
LucasRoasting.com is our website and has been our website, you know, since the beginning. So we did online sales of coffee and we did wholesale all over the Shenandoah Valley. And that's a college town. area down there, Harrisonburg, Virginia. You know, so that community and that area all over the Shenandoah Valley, with James Madison University being there, there was a lot going on in the coffee world. And so we wholesaled. And then, you know, we were going through, we were just going through some talks because we'd come up to New Hampshire a lot and come visit Jenica's family, who's still up here. So she, when her grandma and grandpa moved a long time ago, it kind of split their family in half. And so half the family went to Virginia and half the family stayed up here in New Hampshire. And so we still had a whole bunch of her family up here in New Hampshire to come back and, you know, cousins and whatnot. So we'd come back and forth on spring breaks, brought the kids up here so the kids could get, you know, an idea of what New Hampshire was all about. And somewhere along the way, you know, we all kind of talked about it and just started talking about us kind of liking the North a little bit more than the South, the area that we were living in.
As north as possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you know, now we've got like a, you know, 2 feet of snow on the ground outside. Yeah. And yeah, very, very wintry, very north for sure. But yeah, it was a family decision. So when our youngest was in fourth grade and our oldest was in seventh grade, we had been talking for a few years prior to our move. And we came to it as a family decision to come up here and to, I mean, you know, the oldest being in seventh grade, that was kind of the time frame that Jenica moved down to the Shenandoah Valley. And she didn't enjoy her move down to the Shenandoah Valley from New England. And so there was a lot to talk about yeah. actually moving up here and would it be a successful transition? You know, how are they feeling about it? The kids were great. The kids, they jumped in right away. I've made really amazing friends up here. Now our youngest is about to graduate this year. So, you know, our boys, now 18 and 21, have grown up in grown up in this business and it's all they've known. And yeah, so now we're here. Now we're here. We've got a cafe in Wolfboro in the front of our coffee roastery. And so we roast there. We ship online across the country. We wholesale to all kinds of different places. And we have our cafe.
One of the things that you do, so I love coffee. It's one of the things that I've always loved once I got the like mouth for it, you know, because like when you first get into it, you're just like, oh, this is like bean juice and it makes me happy because I'm awake. But then when you sort of get into it, it's a lot like wine, you know, like the way that it's roasted and like where the beans come from and how you make it, a lot of notes, a lot of wonderful flavors come out. And I don't know how you do that. You roast everything to order from what I understand. So what is the benefit of doing that?
So in our industry, there are definitely small batch roasters, which is what we are considered. Our batch size is 26 pounds into our roaster. And there are some roasters out there that have machines that will roast entire sacks of coffee. So an entire sack of coffee, it might be 132 pounds to 154 pounds. And some of the machines will actually do two sacks of coffee and bigger than that. I mean, so those are not small. Yeah, those are not small batch in terms of everything when you get into that kind of volume. But we're a small batch. So we're doing at most 26 pounds at a time. And every coffee that we make has been definitely torn apart after we've done our initial testing on things. You know, we'll go back to the drawing board and there's certain parameters in the roasting profile, the heat signatures, I guess you would say. So time and temperature, it's like the same recipe over and over for specific coffees, but every coffee is a little different. So every coffee has its own recipe as to how we choose to roast them. And some are slower, some are faster. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it for sure. The science behind what makes a good coffee versus what just makes brown water.
Right.
And there's a lot of brown water in the marketplace. Like
there's a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, I used to work at one of the brown water places. Like I used to work at a Starbucks for a long time when I was in college, and they made me believe that I knew everything about coffee, but it wasn't until I left. I started to pursue coffee as like a thing that I like on my own, that I didn't and that I didn't know shit about coffee. And I'll be honest, going to Europe changed my whole fucking life when it came to like how to experience coffee. So it was cool. Like I came back when I went to Spain. I went to Spain in like 2016 for work, and I came back and I was like, Starbucks is shit. like this is yeah.
Yeah, the fascination of everything that I think the thing that hooked us back in the hobby phase of everything was that we would get coffee way back then from Sweet Maria's, which is in California, ship it across the country. We'd get our package and it would have, I don't know, like 10 different coffees in it. And then I would tear outside to like start, you know, micro batching these things. And like, we'd have four coffees roasted in a couple hours. And then we knew what we were going to have for the next few days. And, you know, every coffee came out different. So every coffee, it's the soil, the atmosphere that everything is grown in, the origin, the way it's processed. Like I started really learning a lot about the science right then. And it was fascinating. So yeah, the wine correlation, certainly the wine taster wheel and the coffee taster wheel have so many similarities the kinds of flavors that we taste. So
can you age coffee the way that you age wine?
So that's a really good question. As far as roasted coffee goes, that's limited. So, roasted coffee tends to be like a fine artisan bread. You know, from the time that you roast the coffee to the time the coffee is consumed, there is definitely a window that you want to, consume things within, but there's a lot of people doing. I mean, there's so many people doing fun things. Like they are vacuum sealing roasted coffee and like shoving it in the freezer. And like, there's so many different things that people are doing that are unique projects that I'm not into necessarily all that, but yeah, maybe you could store it for long periods of time. And you know, the green beans are a little bit easier to store a little longer, because after you roast the coffee, then you open up all the pores in the coffee. So the coffee roasting process, when it goes from the green coffee bean to the dark roasted coffee that we know as coffee, once you get it to that point, then you've opened up the pores of the coffee, and time is definitely starting to tick as far as when you should consume it. But
okay. All right. So you have to roast it in order to consume it, right?
Correct. Yeah, you have to. So, you know, if you go back to the origins of coffee being the Ethiopian goat herders that are wandering along, and, you know, all of a sudden, like, look, the goats are like cavorting about and jumping around. They're the dancing goats. Way back when coffee was discovered, and it was discovered that these seeds or the fruits that surround the seed, you know, the cherry has some caffeine content. You know, that was the origin of coffee being discovered way back when. And, you know, then I guess as it was back in the day, we'll just take every seed that we find and we'll also shove it in fire and see what happens. I don't know if that's actually how it worked, but you know, in the realm of coffee, that is how it works. So
what is this? Burn it. Burn it.
It's good. Scorch it. It's going to taste good.
Burn it.
So, yeah, but it's not consumable. Like the green beans are very dense and very hard. If you were to take the seed, you know, that's what we roast. We call it the bean, but it's actually a seed. And, if you were to take that and crunch it in your mouth, you'd probably break a tooth before it was roasted. But after it's roasted, it becomes brittle. And, you know, you can crunch it up as a chocolate covered coffee bean or just a regular coffee bean.
Yeah, that's so interesting how just the like processing of a thing changes it and makes and can even make it better, like the like with the cacao fruit also, like you
right
the chocolate, you know, like which is an right. in wonderful thing. So it's yeah, great
for sure. Lots of processing involved with chocolate for sure, and lots of processing yeah. involved with coffee too. So
yeah, you know. You actually sent over a really cool chart that I want to pop up. Everyone that's watching, you'll be able to see this. Everyone that is on the podcast and currently listening to this, I'll do my best. We'll do our best to describe it, but like this is the life of coffee.
Yeah, I snagged this from a website earlier tonight. Coffee Bowl is the what we can give it credit to, you know, on our screen here. I'd have to go back and look at exactly what website I snagged it from. But the, yeah, when you look at this, this is like, this is the life cycle of coffee. And, you know, for people who don't know, it's a long process to actually get coffee to start growing and, you know, to harvest it, to dry it, to mill it, to get it sorted, and then to put in to when you're sorting it, then you actually put it in different bags. You know, bean sizes are different. So it might be 15, 16, 17, 18, depending on what kind of coffee. So there's all kinds of things that go into the coffee process. That's not just like the plant process. So we'll start there. The planting process, like once you plant coffee in the ground, it's a 3 to 5 year process for really? That first. Yeah. So what happened? So when we entered the industry 2007, it was only a few years after that that the whole everything collapsed in the U.S. If we all remember that first collapse of the real estate market and
yeah, that was a wonderful time. That was right when I graduated from my undergraduate program. So yeah,
yeah, we had just started a new business that you know, it was a kind of, I mean, the kind of coffee that we roast is a little higher end, so it wasn't good timing for us either. But yeah, the process of coffee, putting it in the ground, and then you know, you got 3 to 5 years before you've got a return on your investment from the shrub that's growing your coffee bean.
Yeah,
and we started in 2007, and then I think it was like 2010, 2011. All the rust, it's called La Roja in Central America, and it was this fungus, this rust that was just invading coffee farms left and right. And once you had that, basically what it meant was you'd have to tear your plants out. You'd have to tear your whole plantation, your coffee up, and then you'd have to restart. So
yeah, you would lose everything, and you lose all that money and all that time.
Yeah, and it was a 3 to 5 year investment to get back into coffee at that point where you weren't making money in the time that those plants were gone. Because so it's a very complex industry. And, you know, Robusta coffee will grow kind of anywhere. It's not as finicky as what Arabica is. Arabica is the only coffee that we use. So Arabica is the higher end coffee. The Robusta right. has like twice as much caffeine. It doesn't, it's a little more woody. It has some tasting notes that lead to imperfection in the cup. It's not as desirable, but, you know, the Robusta is it's used for a lot of things. I mean, Vietnam Robusta right now with everything that's going on in the coffee market actually has been very strong.
So how does that work, Troy? Like, so do you like contact a farmer and then you like work with them? Like, I want to buy your beans in 5 years from now. And then you kind of like these are my beans when they're ready to harvest, yeah. Or do you just kind of like, yeah.
Well, so many of us have different ways that we obtain our beans. And when we jumped into this industry, with my background in psychology, I've always wanted to help people. And so when I jumped into coffee, one of the things that I wanted to do was I wanted to address the way farmers are paid. So the things that are going on right now, like if we're all plenty aware of, like, coffee prices are very high right now. The market, sea market, is very high. And yes. It's the highest it's ever been historically. So we're at historic highs. We've never been at this place, which I'm not going to sit here tonight and use it as a negative in any way. So the farmers have one point in time to make their money, right? So they grow these crops, they sort these crops, they put all the money into harvesting these crops, and they are they're stuck with a limited supply of what they create, so what their plants create. And what's happened recently is we've had a shortfall in global crop creation. Brazil's had a really, really bad drought, and the number of bags are off by the millions of bags in circulation. So supply and demand, I mean, we're seeing, you know, if we're looking at capitalism, supply and demand means that lower supply, more demand, the prices are going up. And so when I jumped into the industry, I didn't know much about coffee. I just knew that I liked roasting coffee as a hobby, and it was kind of cool, and we did a good job of it. But I didn't know the business side of coffee. And this is where a lot of pitfalls actually happen for roasters like me. And because I'm not a big company in any way, shape, or form.
Sure.
I don't have outside funding. So everything that we bring into our business is all funded by ourselves. And so we have no revenue. We have no stream of income outside that are investors or anything like that, whereas bigger companies have those. So, you know, they can always obtain more. So you can go straight to the farm. And, you know, direct trade is absolutely the best for the farmer if the buyer. So there's a caveat there. Direct trade is good if the buyer is willing to give the farmer, you know, the most money for their crop. So the quality that they've grown. And that's the whole thing. So coffee is, you know, it's graded. So coffee is going to be commodity grade, specialty grade, and you know, there is a difference between the grades of coffee, and so that commands a different price point. And the different things, you know, that that infographic that we put up, all those things that are in the middle, the fermenting of the coffee in different ways, you know, the drying of coffee in different ways. There's washed coffee, there's natural processed coffee, there's all kinds of, there's so much that goes into the actual coffee beans themselves that come off of the plants. They're all done different ways, and they all taste a little different. So I used to have rose colored glasses that said I was going to be out there changing the world. And I'll tell you, the coffee market is, it's such a big market, first of all, and it's hard. Like on our end, we can only store just a small amount of pallets of coffee beans, coffee sacks as they come into our facility. We don't have a very big space. We are operating our entire business out of 800 square feet. So
it's a small space.
It is a small space. I mean,
it's a wonderful space, but it's not huge.
Yeah. So 20 feet by 40 feet, and like 600 of that feet square foot is the coffee production side, where the other 200 is our little cafe in the front and, you know, the standing area for people to shop. And we are as tight as we can possibly be in there. And that means we can't bring in a lot of coffee at one time. But we have connections throughout the industry, people who are importers that we trust, that we get samples from, that we get samples prior to getting batches of coffee. You know, we've worked with so many different people. I have to all the farmers out there, I don't know, I really don't know who's going to be watching this video once it's all put up, once we finish this podcast, but to all the farmers out there, I mean, I get your emails, and we get contacted directly by so many people, and it is a lot of work to work directly with farms and work out the, you know, the export import kind of that part, the middle part of everything.
Yeah.
And we have some importers, companies that they're the ones that source the coffee, and they allow us to draw the samples out of what they've imported. And so that takes a little bit of that burden off. There's some other companies out there that are here in our local region that do an amazing job. I'm thinking of Coffee by Design over in Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. They are all the time putting up things about their origin trips. They have a big staff. They have a big company, and so they have a lot of people working. And it's so much easier when you have more people working to get out and to go actually do some traveling around the world to the farms and stuff. In our case, that's totally what we had hoped for, but it has ended up being just our family in such a small space that we're in. We haven't brought in anybody else. We'd need a bigger facility to start bringing in more employees and stuff like that. But that was the goal. We see other people
doing it. It'd still be the goal. Like, it's not like it's not over now, Troy.
Right. It's not over, but it's like our current, the way we're currently set up, I have been down to Brazil. I went down to Brazil on a buying trip with like 18 other coffee buyers early on. I was like 2010, 2011. And in that buying trip, we found a Brazilian coffee farm. I think it was a gentleman and possibly a cousin or his brother. I can't remember at this point. But the people that we were down on the buying trip with, we bought their entire crop. So like their entire crop that they had produced for their little farm. I think it was 20 some bag sacks of coffee. And we the person who had set up the trip was also an importer, and he worked to bring all that back in and then distribute it to all of us that bought that directly from the farmers. So that's the most benefit to the farmers when it can be done that way without the middle part of coffee has a lot of people to get paid in that process. So, infographic.
I would imagine it's a lot of open hands, right?
Yeah. So every stop along the way means paying somebody else. And, so to be able to do the direct trade, that was definitely our original goal, but it hasn't been as easy to structure and set up as what we needed it to be in order for us to do what we do. So
sure. I mean, like we all have, like, I thought I was only going to be doing touring Shakespeare for my entire career. And I haven't done any of that. It's probably since 2008 or 2009. I've been only doing TV and film, which is fantastic. And I love it, but it's not what I thought it was going to end up being. Right. So you change and you adapt the way that you need to, which is totally fine. You know, you're still working in the thing that you want to work in, and your whole mindset of wanting to be a positive change in the world, while maybe it's not as significant in your own mind, I would say that you do have a positive impact on the people that come into contact with you, which is why I'm so happy that I'm able to help, like, share you and your world with my world as much as I have been, because you are a really positive light. You're a wonderful person, you and your whole family, and what you do really brings joy to people. And I'm not just saying that, like,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, like I'm very happy whenever I would come into your shop. It was one of the, like, brightest spots of my day, because you take the time and you put in the effort to really understand and get to know who is, like, walking into your store. And that's rare. That doesn't happen anymore. So it's a thing that is very important. We got a question. So I have a lot of international folks, and Ivan's from Singapore. And first of all, he's saying that this is a great conversation, that he's learning a lot about coffee. Thank you. And then a question for Troy: do you import the Kopi Luwak coffee beans from Indonesia?
That's a great question, Ivan. And yeah, so interestingly, I'm going to use your question as a little bit of a diving board here, because we get people all the time, you know, they ask about the Kopi Luwak, they ask about Jamaica Blue Mountain, Hawaiian Kona. We have stayed away from those for, let me step back. I have had Kopi Luwak before. Somebody who worked for our company, our Wind and Water blend on lucasroasting.com actually has the story of a friend, Paul Helbert, who was our first employed coffee roaster as we got our business up and going in Virginia. I had lived with his family when I was a volunteer in Virginia when I first arrived after college. And then 10 years later, as the circle came back around, we started a coffee business and he wanted to be a part of it. And unfortunately, Paul contracted bone cancer. And the story of Wind and Water is Paul's story, because we dedicated that coffee to him. It was his favorite coffee that he roasted while we were here. The reason I'm mentioning Paul and that story is because Paul was the one who was able to obtain the Kopi Luwak. And so when Paul was working for us, he had obtained this Kopi Luwak, and I think he roasted it at home. And there were a few of us that were able to taste that particular coffee. It's a very expensive coffee. For people who don't know about that coffee, it actually is coffee that is eaten by a civet cat and then passed through. It's eaten by the civet cat, and then so it can be collected in the wild, or it can actually be, you know, coffee can be, the civet cats can be contained and they can collect it that way. But we had some wild civet cat coffee, the Kopi Luwak, and it was very good. It was definitely a little different, and so it's certainly something that is an experience. And because it's so expensive, you know, we don't worry about spending our money on that. Same as, you know, we have access to Jamaica Blue Mountain and Hawaiian Kona, and they're all very expensive coffees. We have access to all the best coffee in the world, the Geisha coffees that are super small micro lot coffees that are the best coffees in the world. We have access to all of that, but we've really focused our business model on, we have always focused our business model on making coffee as accessible, really good coffee, as accessible to people as we can, because we believe, I mean, you know, our background, my family background, my wife and I, we've really done a lot in volunteer service things to help people over the years. And, you know, there's a part of society right now, Josh was talking about earlier as he went on the show, that there's just a lot of focus on the highest end everything. You know, look at the billionaires yeah, are going to do this. And you know, there's a point in time when I call bullshit too. And that focusing on the highest end, the highest epitome of what we can reach all the time. You know, there's other farmers out there, their coffee might be a couple points under another coffee. And, you know, but as long as we as roasters can make it taste exquisite, that's what we're supposed to do. We're the end point that gives the coffee to the consumer. So as long as we're taking their coffee and giving it as much respect as we can, you know, we want good coffee, specialty coffee, to be accessible to people. And right now, the price points that we're seeing at above $4 in the C market definitely pushes prices up to a point that It starts to be unaffordable for some people. So as we
that's because of like climate change and because of like poor yields and because of like things of that nature, right?
It is. I mean, the specialty coffee, the high end specialty coffee, is always going to be really expensive to obtain green anyway. So the specialty coffees that have more processing involved in the fermentation process and the drying process and all the different things that people are doing to make them taste absolutely spectacular, they're going to be more expensive anyway. I mean, you're talking $30 a pound for those coffees. And, right, you know, we had been able to hold a price point for a long time at around $20 a pound, but that's just, it's not even doable anymore. Like current prices right now are $22 to $24 a pound in our cafe and online. And with the coffee that I just brought in the other day, because of the new prices on them, those price points are actually going to be pushed up a little more.
And has that taken a toll on your clientele, or do they not care because they like your coffee?
Well, I mean, that's a fine line. That's a fine line to dance around because, we've never been the company that is trying to push our line to the very top of like what we can take from people. We've tried to be really fair. Maximum profitability, I think that's some of the sickness of our American society is based on that. It's a maximum profitability for everything.
Right.
And we have tried not to hit those points of maximum profitability on everything. And so, yeah, I think we're at that point right now where, with the cost of groceries and things like that people are experiencing. I mean, I'll use eggs as an example, that egg prices have skyrocketed in the U.S. and
because of bird flu. So that'll bounce back at some point.
What I'm saying is, like, so you take the factor of like the coffee prices being really high right now, and you factor that in with all like the eggs, for example. And the combination of those two things, you know, they could add up very quickly in your grocery bag if you were shopping for a coffee. And what we're seeing right now, I mean, a lot of breakfast places are really struggling. I put this up on my own personal Facebook page today, but man, if you have the opportunity to get out into your communities and support a breakfast place, like a little diner or something like that, like, go do it, because breakfast is like, you know, it's like the cheat meal of the day, right? People are like, oh, I'm going to have the cheat meal of the day. It's not lunch. It's not dinner. It's supposed to be cheap, but it's the same amount of work. Like, it's the same amount of labor. People are cooking for you and everything. And now prices are really high, and those people are getting just, hit really hard with all that. So anyway, if I can say anything tonight about what's going on in the service industry, get out there and support some of your breakfast places, because, man, With the coupled prices of coffee going up and eggs going up, it's hitting a lot of those front end of the day places really hard.
I would like to echo that as well. Like, don't go to Applebee's. Don't go to the big chains. Go to the places that are in your town or in your city that are run by people, by small families. They need it more than Applebee's. Places.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to what Wolfboro is. Lots of independence here. It's the indies of everything. That's what we've liked to support everywhere. So yeah.
Well, that's what we're told that America is based off of. Off of the small businessman and the small businesswoman. I don't know if that's necessarily the truth, but it's certainly I think it was at one point.
At one point in time.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much anymore. So,
I mean, people are, like, a new independent bookstore opened up in my town, and for a long time where there weren't any of those, and there are things coming back because people do want them, you know, like I want to be able to go into a place, which is what I was just speaking about before. It's why I love your shit is because it's expertly made and you care about it. You care about it in a way that you translate to people when they meet you, when they buy your product. And that's no bullshit. Like it's the reason that when I walk in, I ask you what I should have is because I know that you by now know who I am and you know what the fuck I like. So I just know that that's true and it's no bullshit. Like you, and that's what I like. It's right. Like you're an honest guy. You're not trying to screw anybody over and you care about people and it's rare. And when I look for people to work with and for companies to like champion, you're the first on my list because like I will work for large things to get like, you know, for like TV and film and to wear like modeling clothes and stuff. But like when it comes to my personal stuff, I will only work with people like you.
We appreciate it, man. That's kind of, I mean, I'll tell you, we haven't stepped foot in a Walmart in, I don't even know. We've been in business for 17 years, and I would say that we probably haven't stepped foot in a Walmart in 15 years. We're always trying to, it doesn't matter what little community we land in or what big community we land in. We're always trying to jump on Google and like look what's around and see, you know, the family business we can support. So I appreciate it, man, because we have built our entire company's lifetime on working with moms and pops. We haven't put our products into any chains, and we haven't for reasons that go into like the freshness of our product. And I mean, we could be making so much money. We could be making way more money than we are by doing all the things that, you know, we're just making so much more product and putting it into places that are higher trafficked areas. But we also know that we draw people to our product. So one of the things about us that we really like is that we try to use our presence to move people towards these businesses that are carrying our products, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have some really small businesses. We have some really small businesses out there. A place down the road that mostly sells pet food to customers, but brought our coffee on and has some bakery items, you know, there with stuff and has vegetables and stuff in the summertime. But we try really hard to move our products into some places that we hope it draws people in to those places for our products. But you know, while they're there, then obviously they're taking advantage of that business there too. So
sure,
giving them business. So that's been how we've been structured from the beginning.
Well, that's great. That's absolutely beautiful because that's how it should be. Everyone should be holding each other's hand, man. That's just the way it should fucking be.
Yeah, if only all the community was like that, right? It doesn't always work out that way. But
it doesn't. It's true. There's a lot of folks that aren't like that. And even in the small business world, even in the like indie film world and all that stuff, it's all about money and profitability. And that's it. And that's the bottom line. And fuck everybody else. So I get it. I get it.
Yeah. coffee, beer, I think that there's been a lot of industries completely saturated in the last 10 years. Our industry is definitely one of them. I mean, I started at my house. I started in a building that we built, but it was a commercial roasting facility. And, you know, we have our competition is anybody that has a garage that wants to have a little 1-pound roaster and, you know, wants to, or 2-pound roaster. And and wants to roast coffee. And our facilities, every year we have hundreds of thousands of dollars in overhead that it takes to run our company. So competition is good though. Like you have to look at competition as pushing you to be your best self. And
it is healthy. So yeah.
We've always looked at that. Right now the WMUR TV has got this thing out for best coffee in New Hampshire, which we've won 4 of the last 5 years. And there's a lot of competition out there in our state this year. I'm not so sure we're going to pull down the win on that thing, but it's good. We're all doing stuff a little differently, and competition and community is good. So it needs to blend together.
I don't know if you can possibly believe it, but we are a bit over an hour now. It went fast.
Oh, I can believe it.
If there's one thing that you want people to know about coffee and why you love it so much, what would it be?
So the biggest thing goes back to my background in psychology. I thought I was going to be a shrink. I thought I was going to be a counselor sitting in an office and, helping people, I guess, listening to people. And now I get to do it from behind. I get to do it as a barista. Some people, they might get a little bit of a free counseling session they come in, but it's the connection thing, man. It's like, so coffee, when I came out of an industry where I was working to help people fix their problems, I wanted to be in some way, I really connected to people. And, this does that. It's this connects to people that are all over the world. This connects to people who don't look like me. That's the beautiful thing about coffee. And the one of the things I miss up here in New Hampshire that we had a little bit more of down in Virginia is diversity. And, we're up here, a lot of people look like me and you, and, I love the aspect of the community that is global in coffee. And, taking a trip down to Brazil was just absolutely eye-opening. So I've raised my kids, my wife and I, we've raised our kids in this business, and the people that are living on these coffee farms down there, they've got little kids running around. One of the things that I'll always remember is a little 5-year-old kid coming up and getting his coffee in the morning right beside me at a coffee farm. Like we're both, five-year-old coming up and grabbing his coffee in the morning, same as I am. Yeah. And man, that's community. That's community. And that's a beautiful thing.
There's nothing better than when coffee is a thing that is so universal. It's why I love it so much too, is that it's part of our vocabulary so much that it's one of the first things that people say when they first meet each other. It's like, let's go have a coffee. Let's talk. Let's get to know each other over this drink. So it's cool.
Yeah. And we need that. I have my own opinions. I definitely have my likes and dislikes as far as what people stand for and what I stand for, where I stand. As much as I want to be able to listen to people, and I try, I really try. Coffee is a connection piece. So it's somebody blasted. So I hope they're listening now. I hope they'll see this. Somebody took a post that I made. Actually, I think it was wearing this shirt possibly the other day. And I was talking about everybody being welcome at our cafe. And mm-hmm. so, we welcome everybody in. So it doesn't matter if you've got a MAGA hat on. It doesn't matter if you are obviously gay or lesbian. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, coffee is a conduit, and coffee is a thing. And so somebody shared something that was like really derogatory about what I said about welcoming everybody. And man, when I say everybody, I mean everybody, because we have so many people that have so many different beliefs that, like, how can you run a coffee shop and not welcome everybody that loves coffee to come into your space? It doesn't matter whether we're like politically the same or different.
Right.
You know, but somebody like took my post and shared it, trying to fuel a fire that, like, when I said everybody, I actually mean everybody. And what you've been there. Yeah, you've been there when different people have come in that, like, you know, may not be like you and I in the same mindset. And like, everybody means everybody. So coffee is a thing, man. It's a connection. And
what did they say about your post? Like, what?
They were trying to fuel the fire and saying something about, because I mentioned the LGBTQ community, and they said something about specifically male, female, and headed down that direction. It was trying to make an issue of something that is not an issue when people get to know us. And people, I mean, myself included, sometimes I definitely, like, I am fired up about a lot of stuff right now in the world. And, you know, we all have our points, but it was trying to take something we had said about inclusion and basically saying that I doubt that he's inclusive of these patriotic people.
I see.
Yeah. And that's bullshit. Stuff like that burns me up. So.
Yeah. Because you like to talk to, like, so I'm the same way where it's like, I don't care what your belief system is. I will talk to you about whatever it is that you believe or whatever you want to talk about. I just don't want you to go hurt people over what you believe, but I'll happily debate you and speak to you about whatever it is that you'd like to talk about, which is apparently a rare quality now, because people don't want to talk. They want to scream at each other.
Right. Yeah.
So, so it's good. I mean, it's good that you're there, like, specifically where you live. It's great that you're there. I know it can be hard at times because you're like a
lightning rod.
Yeah, you are. which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing. You know, like, that's what makes a community. It's, you were just speaking about it earlier. It's the differences. Like, even if everyone is pretty white there, because they are. Just having people that don't all think the same is very important. And it's true. It's fucking true. So.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the beautiful things is that, like, people have left us. Like, we've been in business for 17 years, and we've got a 5.0 rating on Google. If that tells anybody anything about our business and what we've done, but that brings people in from all over New England. Like, that, when they see that, they're wondering, and I mean, you know, you've been to our 800 square foot place. It's like nothing special except for the people in there and the coffee that people get, that special. And I think that is where we started our business. That was the drive. That was, we wanted to make every experience with the products that we were making something special, and something that, so special isn't just because of us. Special translates all the way back to the farm, and the farmers never get seen because they're not here. So that's the thing. Like, what we do has to translate all the way back to the farm level, because those are the people that we want to celebrate with what we do.
Right.
You know, this community that we mean.
So I think you do change the world in maybe not in the way that you thought, but you definitely do. Like, you use your product that you make with your own hands, and you foster community in a place that desperately needs it. And I fucking say that is you changing the world, even if it's that small part of the world. And I think that's important, dude. I think that's important.
I appreciate it, man. I mean, we definitely try. I know that, you know, coming from some of the experience that I've had as far as work goes, You know, some people come in to get a latte, but a little bit extra every day. You know, some people come in to get a latte, and because we're not in a big city and we're not just, you know, we're not just busting our humps to get the person out the door and on to the next person. You know, we actually have some conversation and everything. So, I mean, I think so too. I think that, you know, that is gone. I mean, how rare is it to show up to a place, you're ordering something, whatever it is, and you're actually carrying on a conversation with somebody. It's very rare, but it's something that we absolutely strive to do. So,
I mean, I'm from New York, and you get a larger tip if you go fast, right? People don't want to talk to each other. Except they really do, but they don't because everything's going so fucking fast.
Yeah.
And I've found that despite people that in spite of the culture here that take a couple of extra moments to be like, it'll happen just a little bit slower and we're going to have like a little conversation or just a couple of words. It really goes a long way.
Yeah.
So, cool,
man. I mean, people are, I will be the first to tell you that people are struggling right now. Like people are struggling and, you know, like it's amazing how a cup of coffee and just a little bit of a, how's your day, does it changes the world a little bit because it lets people know that somebody actually freaking cares.
So, it's true.
Yeah.
All right, brother. I have to go feed my child.
Right. So, yeah. This has been a good discussion. I hope there's a lot of stuff covered and we didn't get to the in-depth part of, you know, all the stuff at Origin. But I thanks for bringing me on here and introducing me to your listeners, your viewers. Look at
this comment. Troy's coffee gets my body moving, but his conversations get my mind going. Exclamation point.
Andrew. And Andrew, we might see him a couple times during the day because, you know, he definitely keeps his body going throughout the day. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd love to bring on again and we can get more into the nitty gritty of what it takes to make a cup of coffee. But I mean, like, this conversation was fantastic, man. I really loved it.
Well, I thank you for it. And for everybody that has viewed this, LucasRoasting.com is our website. I will tell you that I am a coffee roaster. I am not a back-end computer guru genius for like website stuff. You know, we our website doesn't get as much attention as it should because we're constantly really busy with all the orders and stuff going out and all the things we're actually making. But with Josh's the live stream live code. And I think there was another one too, possibly Josh 15. There's a few different ways, to save 15% on your first order at Lucas Roasting
and Company. With rising coffee prices, it's the perfect way to get to know this wonderful product.
Yeah.
I swear to God, if you try it, you'll never want any other coffee. I fucking swear.
That's what we're striving for. I mean, we've got quite the following and definitely appreciate the support from the people that love what we do.
Awesome, man. Well, I will speak to you soon. Okay.
All right. Have a good night, Josh.
Thanks, man. You too. Good night. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to the live stream live again. Lucas Roasting Company is the sponsor. You just met Troy. He's an incredibly beautiful person. The promo code is the live stream live, 15% off your first internet order. It is linked below the video on YouTube and on the Facebook. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Please like and share if you're on Facebook. And if you're one of my Instagram folks, thank you so much for being here. I am going to go continue to raise my daughter and I will see y'all soon. Good night.